TV sets come with remote control, and a remote usually means no more than 5 feet. Atlin in the northwest of BC is remote from here, a distance that spans from the 49th to 60th parallel boundary with the Northwest Territories. But for remote, how about the northwest corner of Algeria in the Sahara Desert? That's where Carol Musevich and Gordon Murray discovered a community radio station that would like to have a connection with Co-op Radio in what's their remote Vancouver. Carol is an artist, Gordon's a media critic, both are activists, and Gordon has joined me in the studio this morning. Welcome back to Vancouver.
Thanks, Mordecai. Yeah, it's actually the southwest of Algeria, even more remote. You can't go any further south on the west side. It does go further south on the east, but it's pretty far south.
Okay. Why were you there in the first place?
Well, we had been interested in the plight of the Sahrawi, which are the people from the Western Sahara, for quite a while. And so we wanted to go and visit the refugee camps where they're living, which, as you said, are in Algeria near a town called Tindouf. And so we decided to do that this February, because this year is the 30th anniversary of the Moroccan occupation of the Western Sahara.
So these people have been refugees for some 30 years?
That's correct. They were chased out in 75 by the Moroccan invasion of the Western Sahara, and they've set up these refugee camps, and they've been living in the absolute most desolate part of the Sahara for about 30 years.
Could you give us a physical description of that? You said desolate. What if you're out walking around in the refugee camp, what's your vista?
Well, I guess when people hear the Sahara, they think of sand dunes. And there certainly are some parts of the Sahara which are called ergs or sand seas, where you see huge sand dunes. But in this area of the Sahara, it's the Hamadra, which is a stony desert. And I would say it's almost featureless. There's no hills. There's occasional ravines and gullies where the crust has sort of fallen away, and there's not a tree, nothing. When I say desolate, I've traveled in various parts of the Sahara, but I've never seen anything quite so desolate. And the camps themselves, they've built their houses out of mud, and some people are living in tents. And these are not, I mean, we're not talking about a few tents pitched in the middle of the desert. There's four refugee camps with a total of almost 200,000 people. So these are large cities. The largest camp, which was the one that we stayed in, called Smara Camp, is over 50,000 people.
In such a desolate environment, how do people feed themselves?
Well, the UN, they are official refugees, and there is a UN mission there which supplies them with the very basic food of rice and lentils, and the UN also supplies water. There's no infrastructure in the camp, such as water or electricity or sewage, so each house has an outhouse, and some people have managed to get solar panels. And the UN does deliver water in trucks they have these what look like almost like post boxes outside their houses, but they're just metal boxes where their water is delivered to. And it is quite amazing when you arrive in the camp, and just literally as far as the eye can see are just these mud houses stretching to the horizon. Although after we'd been there for a couple of days, you couldn't see very many because there was a sandstorm, and so you could only see, if you walked 100 yards away, you couldn't see the camp at all.
And these are not people who are used to settled cultivation. Their historic culture was nomadic, was that correct?
That's correct, yeah. The Sahrawi culture is a nomadic culture traditionally. But the area where they come from in the Western Sahara is, although it is, as the name would imply, part of the Sahara, it's mostly along the coast. And so it's quite a different environment than where these camps are. I mean, there are rivers that run part of the year. There's the fishing on the coast. It's quite a different part of the Sahara, much more. There's game and so on and so forth. So their traditional lifestyle, they cannot continue in the area where they're in. But they've decided it's more important to, in a way, to continue their struggle for their land than to leave the camps, even though it's such a difficult situation.
Did you know beforehand that you would find a radio station in the camp?
Not specifically. No, we traveled quite a bit in that part of the world, in Northwest Africa, and in Mali, for instance, we discovered every little town has a radio station, and even a town such as Timbuktu, which is only 10,000 people, has 5 radio stations. So we were aware that in that part of the world, radio is a very important community resource and an important medium, because it's the cheapest way to get information and culture communicated between peoples and in communities, and they're very important community resources. So we kind of expected, and we did ask. That was one of the first things that we asked when we got to the refugee camps: is there a radio station? Can we go and visit the people?
So in this environment, I assume you could see a transmitter.
It's easy to tell where the radio station is. The way the camps are set up is they're divided into neighborhoods, and then there's a sort of central area where the quote government services are, so schools, and they actually do have an internet, a satellite internet set up there, and the radio station and the clinics and so on are all in one kind of central area of the camp. And so there is a generator that runs those central services, but only for about 6 hours a day. And so the radio station is only able to broadcast about 6 hours a day. And even then, the main generator often cuts out. That happened almost every day when we were there. And so the radio station has to go off the air, and the internet shuts down, and everything ceases to function, basically. I mean, the clinics have their own backup generators, but the radio station doesn't.
I gather that's one of the projects that you and Carol are working on, is to try and raise funds for a backup generator.
Yeah, that's one of the things that when we asked them what it was that they needed, the two things that they expressed interest in was, one was connection with the outside world and communicating with Canadians. And so that's why we brought a message back from the director of the station to Co-op Radio and the people of Vancouver. And we're hoping to be able to email essentially sound files back to them with messages from the people of Vancouver that they can play on their radio station. And also the other thing that they really said that they would like to have is a generator, which would give them some independence in terms of their broadcasting and mean that they could broadcast even if there was a problem with the main generator.
I'd like to get to that message that you brought back, but before that, maybe you could tell us a bit about the content of their programming. What kinds of things do people in this locale hear when they tune in?
Well, there's a huge variety, like Co-op Radio, one might say. There's a lot of cultural programming, but there's also, when we were there, there was a, talking to the director of the radio station, there was a doctor who had come in and was doing sort of an on-air clinic and taking calls for people who had medical questions. They have a lot of information for women, because the camps, originally when the camps were set up in 75, it was mostly women, children, and the elderly who had escaped from the Western Sahara and set up the camps, and the men were still fighting in the armed struggle. I think probably we should just go over a quick overview of the history so that people know what the
sure.
How the situation came about. But anyway, as far as the type of programming, we can do that later. So they have music and they play traditional cultures to keep the culture alive. They also cover local events and national events and so on. And they have documentaries that they also will play at certain times of year.
So cultural programming, direct practical assistance programming,
yeah.
and news and so on. Let's introduce the recording you brought back from the woman who's the director of the radio station. Just tell us a little bit about her, then we'll hear her voice speaking in identify the language she speaks in, and then you'll tell us what she said.
Okay, her name is Muna, and she's the director of Radio Smara, which is the community radio station for Smara Camp. And she, as I said, she wanted to send a message to the people of Vancouver and Co-op Radio.
What sort of age woman is she? About?
I would guess in her late 30s.
Okay, let's hear Muna.
السلام عليكم نرحبوا بكل سكان منطقة فانكوفر من كندا وأنا منى محمد الأمين مديرة الإعلام الجهوي بولاية سمارة شاكرين لكامل مدن يد العون وتكلموا عن الإذاعة هذه إذاعة جهوية من مخيمة اللاجئين الصحراويين في منطقة تندوف بالجزائر نحن هذه الإذاعة هي إذاعة جهوية محلية أهداف نشأتها ما يقلوا عن أهداف نشأة الإذاعات الجهوية كاملة من أهداف ترفيهية إحياء التراث المحلي للمنطقة ومعالجة الظواهر الاجتماعية وتثقيف سكان ولاية سمارة وعندنا كذلك بث تلفزيوني محلي للولاية نقوم من خلال هذه التلفزة الجهوية بث أشرطة وثائقية وتغطية كل المناسبات والأحداث اللي تتم داخل الولاية ونقوم بنقلها عن طريق التلفزة الجهوية لكل سكان الولاية وبكل هاي الإمكانيات البسيطة الحمد لله قدرنا عن نحقق نجاحات كبيرة وبثنا وبشت فضل
Now we're going to have Batia doing the translation. Okay. So we're going to ask you for the translation.
They did give us a translation of what Muna had said, and she starts out "Salaam Alaikum," which means "Hello, peace be with you." Hello to all the people of Vancouver, Canada. I am Muna Mohammed Amin. I am the Regional Director of Communications in Smara Camp, one of the four Sahrawi refugee camps situated in southwestern Algeria. Our objectives at Smara Radio Station are the same as community radio stations all over the world. That is to educate our people, to cover local events, social issues, and to preserve our cultural heritage. Muna also goes on to say that as well as regional and local coverage, the radio also broadcasts national events and some documentaries prepared by other radio stations. And she concludes by saying that despite their very limited resources and the remoteness of their situation, they feel that they do manage to achieve many of their objectives at the radio station.
Let me ask you how you think Co-op Radio could link up with Radio Smara.
Well, there's a number of ways that that was our immediate thought when we went to the radio station and talked to the people. And as I said, they were really excited about the idea of cultural exchanges. And one of the things that I haven't mentioned is that the Western Sahara was a Spanish colony. So many of the Sahrawi, I would say most of the Sahrawi, speak Spanish, although they don't speak English. And the language that she was speaking in is Hassanya, which is the traditional language of the Sahrawi people, which is 75% Arabic. But people go to school in Hassanya and Spanish in the camps. And so obviously there's a large Spanish-speaking community in Vancouver, and we mentioned this to them, and so they were quite excited about the idea of exchanging news and information and just sort of having a community cultural exchange in Spanish would be the easiest for them. Although they can get things translated. They provided us an English translation of what she said, and they can do translations there if we send messages or information in English. And you know, obviously with the internet, the ability to exchange information, sound files over email makes it relatively easy to do that, and that was the thing that they were most excited about.
Oh, so our friends in America Latina El Dia, who broadcast right after this, are right up the alley there.
Yeah,
linguistically, a connection can be made. That's
definitely
wonderful.
And in fact, a lot of there aren't any universities in the camps. There are regular schools and high schools. So a lot of Sahrawi go to university in either Spain or Cuba.
Oh, well, let just finish up. You were going to give a brief sketch of the history. 30 years ago, they were made refugees.
Just quickly, so people know what we're talking about. It was formerly called the Spanish Sahara. It was a Spanish colony, and then in the 70s, there was a national liberation movement and an armed struggle. A group called the Polisario started fighting against the Spanish colonization. And when the Spanish withdrew in 75, they sort of set up a secret deal with Morocco. And so Moroccan troops came in as soon as the Spanish left. But there was a brief moment where the Sahrawi declared an independent Saharan Arabic Democratic Republic. And so it has been recognized by the UN, by the Organization of African Union, as an independent country. The International Court of Justice ruled that Morocco has no claim to the Western Sahara. And so ever since that time, the Sahrawi have been struggling to get their land back. And so there was an armed struggle that went on for years, and there was sort of a stalemate with the Moroccans, and there was a UN brokered ceasefire in 1990, and there was part of the ceasefire agreement was that there was going to be an immediate independence referendum within 2 years. And now, 14 years later, there still has not been a referendum, and Morocco has been stalling and stalling and stalling. And so the Sahrawi really want the world to support their call for a referendum and remember their struggle. Because they're forgotten, especially in North America.
We'll draft a reply and hope you can send it from Red Eye for the people at the community radio station.
Well, thanks for having me, and I hope people out there will go and learn more about the situation there, because it's really appalling. I'll just give one website that has good information in English, and that's wsahara.net.
Okay, wsahara.net for more information. And Gordon and Carol brought back some music from the Sahrawi people, and we'll play some of that next week. I've been speaking with Gordon Murray. He's a media critic and an activist, and he's also a volunteer with Carol Musayevich in Palestine with the International Solidarity Movement. In fact, they went immediately to Rafah, Gaza, after the cruel murder there of Rachel Corrie by the Israeli military, which is also an anniversary 2 years ago this month.